Previously on Castaway.
Who's your favorite captain of any series and why?
And now for the conclusion of Castaway Generations.
Who's your favorite captain of any series and why?
That's an easy one for me.
Okay.
Now, of course, I was similar to you in the way that... All right, so when I started watching Star Trek, the original series was super cheesy to me. It was in the same realm as Twilight Zone.
Oh, no!
And Batman 66. Oh, so it just had that cheese factor, you know? Oh, God! But then Next Generation came on, and yeah, after that bumpy, like, first season or so, I really started to get into it.
Yes.
And part of what really made me get into the Next Generation and really pay attention to it was your reaction to the cliffhanger at the end of Best of Both Worlds.
Oh, I love that.
You must have watched that last 30 yes. seconds like three times. Yes. You rewound the tape. And I just remember you were just so excited about it.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, wow, okay. I guess that's a cliffhanger, you know.
Yeah.
Because back then we were watching stuff like Quantum Leap and everything.
Yeah.
And it just went right along with that.
We had to wait months to find out what happened between those two episodes.
That's right.
The final
right.
of one season and the beginning of the next season. Months! Months!
But by the time that show wrapped up and by the time Deep Space Nine started,
yeah,
like I was like full bore. I was full bore on board with Trek.
Yes.
And that leads me to the answer to your question, finally.
Yes.
Captain Sisko is my favorite captain.
Yes.
Because, I mean, right from jump, DS9, it had that bumpy beginning.
And yes.
And it was a little bit by design and a little bit by accident where, you know, these characters don't trust each other.
Yes. They're
still learning each other. Sisko absolutely despises everybody's favorite captain.
He does.
The Picard, and that's like right there. I'm like, I got to know what's going on here. Like, how dare you?
It's the truth.
Right. You know?
Oh, I if I was to answer my own question, Benjamin Sisko, you know, it's funny because he was not well liked in terms of Star Trek fans at first for his depiction. Because of that, there was an animosity between Ben Sisko and Jean-Luc Picard. And it was I don't know if it was real in life, but, you know, the storyline is that Ben Sisko blames Picard for the death of his wife.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And so there is no love between them early on in, you know, in that time.
And he's not dumb. He understands that at the time he was possessed by this being.
Yes.
That he was being manipulated.
Yes.
But that's still the face of the man that caused all this destruction.
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, that is exactly right. When they had the big showdown at Wolf 359.
Yes.
And you know, all that happened. And I love how they wrote that. I think of course, because I have two beautiful sons, and I love how they wrote the character of Jake and his father. Jake is Ben Sisko's son.
Yes.
Obviously. And he was a single parent, and being a parent was his most important role. He didn't aspire to be captain of that deep space port. He didn't want to be captain of the port. He resented being sent there. He didn't get along with many people. He brought along foreign things like baseballs, just the recurring baseball in the series. And he bought, you know, a son who had literally no friends on that spaceport as well.
That's right. He was the Marshawn Lynch of Starfleet.
Yes.
He was just there so he wouldn't get fined.
Yeah, exactly. and so, you know, I love the Ben Sisko character and how he evolved and his tie and his evolution as a man, as the Sisko, as he's called later on in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who haven't seen it, you got to figure out who the Sisko is and why he's the Sisko. And it's just amazing the relationship that comes between him and the Bajorans.
Yes.
Because he, again, resented being there, almost resented the Bajoran issues that they had. And he becomes beloved with the Bajoran people. He becomes a very important person in their lives. Certainly, there's much more to him, in fact, that I wanted to explore, and I was hoping that they would somehow get back to that at some point about, you know, whatever happened to Sisko.
Yeah.
But I wish, in terms of unity, and the reason I bring up the word unity is because I wrote a Star Trek script.
Yes.
About all, you know how they go back in time and forward in time? There was a bad, but the essence of my script is there's a bad guy in the universe. And what he does is he kidnaps all the captains. Okay?
Yes.
And then certain crew members from every series come to try to rescue all the captains. And I would love to see somehow an exploration of all of them in the same place interacting with each other as themselves.
That would be cool. Yeah.
That would be kind of cool, especially while they're all still alive. I mean, you know, obviously we've lost a few people from the original series, and I'm sure there are other folks that have passed along. You know, while they're still alive, I would love for them to be together, not just in a around a big round table answering questions, but I would like for them to resume their character with each other.
Yes.
And deal with a common foe or a common problem as their characters, because I think that they would really enjoy that kind of reprise of their thing. So, and as their older selves, yeah. I mean, as their older beings. So
we got a taste of that in Generations.
You know, we did.
It was kind of bittersweet because it was like the passing of the torch from the original cast to the Next Generation cast. Yes. As far as the movies go.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, that was well done.
Yeah, but I also think that with Sisko, they're. You kind of get the feeling you kind of know what, well, obviously we know what happened to Kirk and how that was resolved, mm-hmm. at least, you know, to this point. We kind of know what happened with Picard. He ideally gone off to, you know, grow grapes in France or whatever like that.
Yes.
You know, we kind of know what happened with Catherine Janeway. You know, they made it back to the, you know, to our quadrant.
To the Alpha Quadrant.
The Alpha, yes. Quadrant. She ended up being an admiral or something like that. I mean, we kind of know what happened to each one of them in a sense, but we never get a real good resolution of Sisko.
Right. We were told that, okay, I'm not going to ruin the ending because I know for a fact that we have a few listeners that have not quite completed Deep Space Nine yet.
Ooh!
But the series is left on a satisfactory note, but also a cliffhanger.
Yes.
And I think that has been explored in some of the novels. Now, that's something else I wanted to get into.
Okay.
The novels themselves, like, I don't know, you read some of the Peter David stuff,
right? I did. Peter David is my favorite Star Trek author.
And not just because he's your namesake.
Not because David Peters loves Peter David. And that he, too, had two kids.
Yes.
And he's about my age.
Yes.
And, you know, so. But I love his storylines. And some of them have kind of come a little bit true.
Mm-hmm.
You could almost see some of the admirals. Like, for instance, in you know, the best of both worlds. There's the really gold-charging person that comes on the ship, and she pushes Riker to be more than he is. You can almost see some of Peter David's characters in some of the other episodes, in especially in Next Generation, where some of his characters kind of pop up. In fact, he did a series of novels that dealt with the Academy years, which are neat to do and neat to follow. And there's, in fact, Shatner, to be honest, I almost enjoy as much as an author as an actor. As an author, he's pretty provocative. And he's written a number of really good books, his own series.
Shatner?
Yes.
Yeah, Wayne Tech Shatner. World.
Yes, yes. The Tech series was very, very entertaining.
Yeah.
But he's also done some Star Trek things that I found very enjoyable. And I guess that's where, you know, you can't make a series out of everything. So, but there are a couple of storylines that I would like to have seen tied up just a little more, because I'm interested in it. So, what did you? Another question: what did you think of our first woman captain, Janeway? First woman captain that we saw.
That's true, yes.
Because we found out in movies, I think it was in movies, or I think it was the Next Generation episode, when they went back in time, and there was a woman captain of the Enterprise. I think Enterprise C was, in fact, a woman captain, I think.
I think you're right.
Because they get, was it Wolf 359 or somewhere where she was killed in action when they went back in time and they let Tasha Yar go back with that ship, and it sets up a whole storyline for Tasha Yar to reappear.
It's a Romulan. Forget the time stream. We're just gonna let her go.
You know, right? Fine. If you want to go, you're not supposed to be here. Okay.
We don't want to hold you down.
Yeah, we know. I'm not supposed to be here. I remember distinctly. We said, "I'm just guy that says I'm not supposed to be here." Well, okay.
Because listening to Whoopi Goldberg is a great idea for everybody. Yes. Yeah, it was Rachel Garrett. She was the captain of Enterprise C.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so, but Janeway, again, I thought was wildly interesting.
Wildly interesting. She was taking no prisoners. She knew exactly what she wanted out of everything.
Yes.
You know, they made it so you knew that they would not have survived being that far away from home.
Yes.
If she weren't the captain. She had to make some tough choices.
She did.
More difficult choices than arguably any of the other captains.
She did.
Because she was out in the wild. She was.
She had a very, I don't want to say the crew was dysfunctional, but the crew was.
They were split in half, basically.
You know, you had the Chakotay character and then.
The Maquis, yeah.
You know, and the Maquis, of course, were a part of that. And then you had Tuvok, you know, Tim Russ, you know,
Black Vulcan.
Vulcan, that's right. And yes, and so we found out that Vulcans can be black, which was great. Great to know.
The question you never knew you had answered for you, right here.
Yes,
but great. You should have been asking all along.
Right? Yes,
where Black Vulcan's at? There you go.
And then, you know, B'Elanna Torres, who, you know, was as feisty a Klingon woman as you ever want to meet.
Right.
And then Robert Duncan McNeil, who, you know, was your bad boy pilot, you know. He just stayed bad. He stayed in trouble. But he could pilot a ship. And then Harry Kim, you know, who could get down as a Starfleet operations officer. So,
yeah,
they had a very interesting crew. And they had to spend a lot of time together.
Yeah, you know, that's actually interesting. I would say this, that even though Sisko was my favorite captain.
Yes.
And there are a lot of classic moments on Deep Space Nine. I would say Voyager is probably my favorite series.
Interesting.
Just because you didn't know what was going to happen.
You did not.
The we prime didn't. Directive was out the door.
Out, most out time. The door. That was it. It was out the door. there were times where we just didn't know if they were going to resolve.
Right.
I didn't know. One of the cool things about Voyager 2 is that we get glimpses of what occurred with them even after they got back.
Yes.
I'm glad it didn't just end when they, you know, circled the Earth one good time. Because I wanted to know how they were welcomed back. I wanted to know what happened. You know, again, I want to know what happens to Janeway further down the line. I do. And you know, I guess that's a good thing when you want more as opposed to saying, okay, I've had enough of this.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But what a great moment when she showed up in Nemesis.
Yes.
Oh, man. Yes. When she came in with the cavalry, they got that good shot of her. It was, yes! Janeway's here to save the day.
Janeway, indeed. I love her character, and I must admit that the character that played Janeway, Kate Mulgrew, was one of my favorite characters.
On the Quidditch?
No, I'm going to tell on myself.
Uh-oh, here we go.
I'm going to tell on myself. There was when I would come home from school in the afternoons, and in the afternoon when I would get home real early, I would have lunch at home, and there wasn't anything on TV to watch. We didn't have cable back then, you know, with 800 channels, and there was no DVD or VHS players. So you had to watch what was on, and there was this soap opera called Ryan's Hope.
Ryan's Hope.
And Kate Mulgrew was the young, you know, Ryan. She was young Mary Ryan, I think it was. And she was hot! And I used to watch Ryan's Home just to see Kate Mulgrew. And I'm sorry, you know, Dad, got to confess.
That's all right.
Yeah, got to confess. Right.
Credit where credit's due.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
So since then, of course, she's gone on to play the runaway character on Orange is the New Black Red.
Yes.
I don't know. Do you watch
Orange is the New Black? I hear I should.
She is fantastic.
Really?
Her accent is horrible. But she is great. She just brings so much just passion to that role. And her character has such an interesting backstory and just, you know, nice. Her motivation and everything.
Nice.
And also, just one of my things, because I listen to a lot of audiobooks and everything while I'm driving, and she can kick some major tail on audiobooks.
Really?
Yeah, she does all the characters and everything.
Oh, my.
She did one for Joe Hill, who's Stephen King's son.
Uh-huh.
It's a horror book called Nosferatu.
Okay.
And she just completely just absorbs you into the moment.
Wow. I love those good audiobooks where the one narrator, one person talking, goes into the various characters.
Mm-hmm.
The audiobooks, by the way, for Harry Potter, the guy that does them, I forget his name, he is terrific. When he starts talking like Hagrid, or he starts talking like Ron or Hermione.
He's a great Hermione.
He is. Yes. He's a better Hermione than Hermione is.
Yes.
I mean, we listened, you know, when we would go to school, because that was all during the time when Michael was, you know, getting taken to school. And we listened to the books on the way to school for years. And it was better than the movies, mm-hmm. because it was in your head, and he nailed each character. Just nailed it.
Oh, yeah.
And so...
I agree. You hit me to him. And I would, like, just play some... I play video games and just turn that on instead of listening to the game music.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, his name was Jim Dale.
I think he won many awards.
He won many awards. Yes. And I think he's, like, in the Guinness Book of World Records for most characters.
Yeah.
You know, portrayed by a single person in an audiobook.
Yes. He is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
As that. And I love a good book that is narrated well that way. And then you really get a good thing.
And you know, you have a good narrator when, like, there's no bells and whistles.
Right.
It's just their voice.
It's just their voice.
And that's what Kate Mulgrew does, too, bringing it back a little bit. Like, she just does a delivery. There's no music, nothing like that. It's like, hey, Random House, boom, let's get to the story. Here it is.
Yes.
She does these amazing character voices.
Yes. All right, another question.
Yes.
Besides Majel Barrett, which character did you like best that maybe appeared in two or more series? So
throw some names out there.
Okay. Q.
Q, yes.
Worf. Miles O'Brien.
Miles O'Brien, yeah, that's a good one.
Miles O'Brien. Yeah. Obviously, Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, I mean, if we're talking about someone who went on to be a regular, semi-regular on another show.
Yes.
Hands down, it would have to be Worf.
Worf.
Because absolutely. I appreciate the fact.
I didn't see that coming either.
No.
I didn't see that coming. His whole thing with the Defiant. I didn't see that coming at all.
Right. Because with O'Brien, it's like, okay, they don't really use him that much over on TNG. Let's just give him something to do over here.
Give him something to do.
Keiko got a whole lot of screen time, you know.
Yes, she did.
It was a complete, like, upgrade for him.
Yes.
As far as, like, he might as well have been billed as a co-star on this, but it's not. And I'm sure that was written into his contract. Like I got to be on screen almost every episode. Give me a storyline.
Yeah.
Because there's a meme that's been going around. Like, if you just see his role on Next Generation, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
There's a comic strip. This is called Lonely O'Brien. And the idea is, like, while everybody else is having an adventure, they just show him in the transporter room just standing there, checking his watch, just looking at the transporter. You know, playing Rubik's Cube and something.
Yes.
Just random stuff like that. But yeah, I would definitely have to say Worf for a full-time character. I like the fact they were just like, we're not done with him yet.
Yes.
And Michael Dorn, he loves working, obviously.
He does.
Yes.
He clearly enjoys being an actor. And it's almost like you can almost tell he would, I don't want to say he was begging to be in the next one, but, you know, it was like a seamless transition almost for him to say, hey, I'm here. You guys got something for me to do? And that's a good thing.
Now, right.
I will tell you a couple that I love Q. Of course, Q is one of my favorite characters of all time in Star Trek lore. But I like some of the bad guys as well. And there was a Klingon bad guy who was at least on Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. And his eyes were the wackiest eyes I've ever seen.
And his name was Dr. Emmett Brown.
Gowron. Remember Gowron?
Yes.
With the big eyes, you know. Yeah. And you know, when he takes possession of the Klingon High Council.
Yes.
And the sisters of there, Lursa and Baytor.
That's funny. I Google Gowron, and the first hit, Gowron eyes.
Gowron eyes. That's exactly right. He had those big eyes. Okay. And they were on full view.
Yes.
Lursa and Baytor and the Duras boy, who was only a boy, the boy raises up at Gowron and says, "The Duras family will one day be, you know, head of the council." And Gowron says, "But not today." With those eyes, big.
Yes.
I love Gowron.
Yes.
I do. And then one of the best bad guys, that Gol Dukat.
Oh, Gol Dukat, definitely. Yeah.
Gol Dukat was so complicated.
My goodness.
Sometimes I didn't know whether he wanted to be a good guy or a bad guy. Sometimes he had me fooled.
Right. And then when he got the facial reconstruction surgery.
Yes. Right. I'm like, hey. Like,
they all can do that and none of them have done this? Why not?
That's right.
It's not only aesthetically pleasing, but you have smoothness instead of bumps. And
yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Anywho, I'm not body shaming Dukat at all. That's how you want to look. That's how you should look.
But you know what's funny? We talked all this time and the word Data never has come up.
That's true.
Your favorite doctor has to be named, whether it's Crusher or even Catherine Pulaski, who took her role for a couple of years. Remember, Dr. Pulaski took a role for a few years, and then Crusher came back.
She's like, no.
Yeah, I guess she was on Broadway or something at the time. You know, and of course, Bones in the original series. There was nobody like Bones.
Nobody like him.
You know.
Yeah, he even appeared on the first episode of Next Generation.
Yes, he did.
That's right.
As an old doctor.
That was kind of the passing of the torch, too. They would always have somebody, at least from the previous series, kind of jump in there.
Kind of walk you through.
Yeah.
You know, make it easier for you guys like me that, you know, say, oh, no.
It's not my track. I don't know.
No, I don't know. This ain't my track.
You know. And that's the other thing, too. We haven't really touched on, speaking of Quantum Leap, we haven't touched on Enterprise.
Well, that's true. And, you know, he the captain of Enterprise, Jonathan Archer.
Yes.
I thought he was phenomenal. In the role. He had the toughest job, I think, of any of the captains.
Mm.
Because there had been so much laid down for him already. He had to do a little something different. And I thought he was a trailblazer in that role. I really did. I thought he had a tough way to go. And what was that, the shortest series as well? Wasn't it like 5 years instead of the full 7 or 6 or something like that?
I think the original series got canned faster than that did. However, I know that it wasn't really well received with the fans as much as they would have liked.
And I thought that was unfair. I actually thought that it was a nice little turn because they were inventing everything. You know, the nacelles and the whole idea of warp speed and
it only lasted 4 seasons.
Yes, right? And that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
I like Scott Bakula as in that role. I thought he was excellent. Mm-hmm. I think he's excellent in most every role you see him in.
Oh yeah, he brings it.
He really does. He really does. He was in Quantum Leap, right? He was in Quantum Leap. And I really like Quantum. That's another one that I really have to go back and look at. Quantum Leap is very good. And I need to go back. But, you know, they introduce Vulcans. T'Pol was in there.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she, at that point, she wasn't really trusting of Earthlings. There wasn't a whole lot of trust built up at that point.
Right.
Like, not like even Spock and Kirk. There was much less trust. And then, you know, and then Trip, who was, again, you know, kind of a, Captain Archer's friend and all, and you know, Malcolm Reed was in it, and Travis was in it. Travis, that was the brother, right? Wasn't Travis the brother?
I think
that was, you know, he was kind of a baby boomer kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but I actually thought it was quite provocative. I knew it wasn't going to last long because the characters, I don't think were, I don't think folks kind of cared about the characters as much as they cared in other, and maybe, you know what, there's a life cycle in things and in business and in ideas, and maybe it was just, maybe this was the end, even though it was the beginning. It was a story about the beginning of the whole Star Trek, the pre-Star Trek time. But, you know, we had had probably as a society enough of Star Trek after 3 or 4 decades of, you know, constant. That sometimes, you know, just like in anything, if you get too much of something, you know, you learn to appreciate it less. I wish there was a series. I hear rumors that there may be a series coming out in 2017.
You are correct. That's one more thing I wanted to talk about, actually. The 2017 series is going to do something that no other Trek has done before. it's first of all, CBS is embracing this fully once again. They're bringing it back into the fold.
Nice.
Yeah, don't say that too quickly, though, because they're using this as a launch pad for their CBS All Access app.
Oh, really?
So the first episode is going to air on CBS itself. Then every concurrent episode will be on CBS All Access.
Oh, you know what?
And it's going to be behind a paywall.
Oh, you know, it's like a drug dealer, okay? Yeah. The first hit is free. And then after that, you got to pay me $9.95. Golly.
That's going to be an all new, you know, cast, characters, all that stuff. There really hasn't been much said about it.
Okay.
There have been rumors that that's not even going to be the final name of it. It's gonna have a different name.
Okay.
There's rumors that it's going to be an anthology series, which I think would be great. Ooh. If they just did like American Horror Story.
Ooh.
And took a season and did one complete story and then move on to another story the next season.
That's very, very provocative.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
Yeah.
I actually am ready for another series. I would love to see this continue. I hope it does not lose the flavor that transcends each one of the series,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, really focuses on the interplay and relationships between disparate people and problem solving as a group being focused on and relished and enjoyed. You know, I love the Star Trek episodes where, you know, a little bit of real life comes in. And this is going to sound really strange because most people don't like the episode I'm about to talk about.
Oh.
Which is the Tasha Yar death episode.
Oh, yeah.
When she is killed off, it was so senseless. There was no meaning. They encountered something that was just pure evil. And that killed Tasha just to make a point. And Tasha was a regular person on this series, an integral part of this series. And they had to deal with that, each in their own way, including Data, who had a physical relationship with her.
Right, because he was versed in many.
Yes, exactly right. And you know, I know they were trying to find a way to bring her back, and they successfully did. You know, as a Romulan's daughter or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they deal with a lot of real life things. There's an episode where, and again, Next Generation, where the Counselor Troy gets knocked up by an alien.
Yeah.
And has a baby, like, in 4 days.
Within the span of the episode.
Within the span of the episode, she has a baby, has to raise the baby. And, you know, and the baby lives for a little while or grows up to be whatever and then evolves into something else. And she didn't know it at the time, but she had to deal with being a single parent.
Right.
Not knowing who the daddy is. That sounds real familiar in the 21st century.
It's like, how are we going to reference this in our show?
Yeah.
Make it grandiose. Make it grandiose.
I mean, you know, and, you know, Star Trek was legend for dealing with 20th and 21st century issues in a 24th, 23rd century way.
Yes.
And so I hope that they don't lose that flavor. I hope they don't. And I'm confident that whoever picks up the mantle of doing this will, you know, keep that in mind. Because there's a lot to explore. And it would be wonderful then to keep that flavor that I enjoy of, even though they're in space, they're dealing with the issues that we deal with every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to give you a little bit of trivia on that Tasha Yar episode.
Yes.
It crossed my mind when you mentioned it earlier. Now, the way that, of course, filming worked back then, and still now, they film the episodes out of order. So the episode where she died was not the final episode that she filmed.
Really?
The final episode that she filmed was named Symbiosis.
How about
and that? There's a brief moment in this episode where there's a pod bay closing, mm-hmm. and she's behind it, and you can just see her wave goodbye.
Oh, wow.
And that was it for her. That was the last scene that she filmed at that time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting.
Just one of those things. Of course, back then with standard definition TVs, you couldn't really focus on anything too closely.
Yes.
So it's probably mist and fuzzy and everything. Yeah. So I was admonishing us for not talking about Enterprise at all, but we haven't talked about the movie even by reference.
The movies or...
Oh, I'm sorry, the reboot.
Oh, the reboot.
Yeah, with Chris Pine and co.
I like Chris as the captain. I like him as a young Kirk. I like the direction that they're going and the fact that they're not holding fast to everything. Mm-hmm. In fact, if that little tidbit of information about Spock being, you know, a sex symbol is true, that's originally what they want to do, they've gone back to the original theme.
Yeah.
Because obviously, her and Spock got a thing going on in the latest iteration.
Oh, yeah.
Which is okay.
Yeah.
At first, I was taken aback a little bit. I must say, I was taken aback. And, you know, because she puts Kirk in his place, you know, because Kirk think he all that. Okay. But she only got eyes for Spock. And I like that. Yeah. I do like that.
Yeah.
When I was watching the I think it's the second movie that's a reboot of the Khan story.
With Cumberbatch, yeah.
Yes. I thought that was nice to reboot that and to see it that way. I like that. But I also like the fact that they're not bound by just doing a rehash of the original series.
Mm-hmm.
That they are, in fact, taking risks. And the risk of Uhura, you know, being attracted and fully exploring her relationship with Spock. The fact that Kirk is still a renegade, but, you know, now we get to see why, you know, he is kind of what he is a little bit more. The little character that Chief O'Brien brought along with him, that little guy with the buggy eyes, you know, that... I forget what his name is.
Oh, Scotty.
The Scotty Baldwin. Yes. You know, I kind of like that, too. There's a scene, and I think it's in the first one, at the end of the first one, where old Spock is talking to himself
mm-hmm.
with younger Spock. And the younger Spock says, father, to him. And he turns around, old Spock turns around and says, I am not our father. I thought that was one of the better lines I've ever heard in a Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
And the fact that they greet each other and he takes the time to say, look, don't be so hard on yourself. Take the time to get to know Kirk because he's going to be very important in your life. And, you know, I love that interaction between those two. Obviously, it was important for that transition, especially with Leonard Nimoy's passing. We're not going to see him again, obviously, in a movie.
I thought it was brilliant the way they handled where New Trek is in the whole continuity of the whole thing.
I agree.
Nowadays, you know, you can't just skate by with continuity errors because we have all this media at our fingertips.
Yes.
Where you don't have a season to get over and forget. You can go back and watch season one of something five times in a row while waiting for season two.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. The second film... reminded me just a little bit of a James Bond movie in that, you know how James Bond movies, they always start with instant, unbelievable action.
Yes.
And when the Enterprise rose out of the lake it was hiding in, when they were doing an observation of a primitive culture and they got caught and they're running back to the ship, which is hiding in the at the bottom of the lake, and it comes roaring up out of the lake. It was instant action. So it kind of reminded me of something like that.
Yeah.
But you can do things now, and I'm sure that there's a whole thing about the things you can do now because of the technology that you couldn't do back in the old, obviously back in the original series days. But the genius of Star Trek remains the same, regardless of the technology. It's the story. It's the relying on each other that we're better working together than we would have been otherwise. That's the genius of Star Trek, that we are diverse. And because of that, we're better. Mm-hmm. We're better as a diverse crew. And that never say die, never give up. Like Bones says in Star Trek 2 or 3, he looks up at the ship crashing into the atmosphere. And Kirk says, "My God, Bones, what have I done?" And Bones said to him, "What you always do, you give a fighting chance to live. You do whatever you got to do to get a fighting chance to live." Even though he destroyed the Enterprise and didn't know where they were going to go from there. That's a beautiful sentiment. We all want to believe that there's, even when we're seeing crash and destruction, that yes, we will overcome this. That's the essence of Star Trek. We can do this, you know, and that's the essence of Kirk. I'm going to find a way. I'm going to cheat or do whatever I got to do. Kobayashi Maru, otherwise. Well, I'm going to find a way.
That's right. That's right. All right. So that actually wraps it up exactly where we started. So I think this is a good place to end for now.
All right.
Just one more little thing.
Yay.
Today, it was announced that we can do this kind of thing on Castaday because it's timely. You know.
Castaday.
Today, they announced that Canada would be minting coins to commemorate Star Trek's 50th anniversary. Oh,
nice.
So we're going to get four coins. We're going to get Kirk. We're going to get Scotty. We're going to get Leonard Nimoy. Oh, my God. Spock.
Yes.
And we're going to get Lieutenant Uhura.
Nice.
Yeah, I think that's a good group to pick right there.
That's nice. Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so it's kind of going to be like a, you know, coin of the month thing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Canada puts out some wild, like, currency.
Oh, the Canada currency is not to be believed. If you've never been there, they have these coins called loonies and toonies.
Yes.
And I'm going to let you enjoy that, you know, when you get up there and find out what they are. But the paper money is not really paper.
It's futuristic.
It's as futuristic as anything on Star Trek. There's metal in it. There's plastic in it. You can't tear it. You can't destroy it.
It's got good voices.
It's just, I love it.
It's almost like when you get the Transformers and it would come with that red film that you put over the back to see what its powers are, its power levels. It's kind of like that. They should incorporate that into the money.
Indeed. Oh, that's wonderful. Good for them.
Yeah, yeah. So, of course, I had to get one of those.
All right. Okay.
All right. So, once again, this is the end of our episode. Dad, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, well, my pleasure. You know, just, you know, I enjoy. And, you know, this is a common thing that we have, the three of us. And you know, obviously, it's a love. It's none but love, bro. None but love.
Oh, yeah. All right, folks. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did. Thanks for listening. And this is Matt Peters, David Peters saying, stay mighty.